Welcome to the West Ham Way USA podcast. I'm your co-host Tony. On the other side, we have Brawley in St. Louis.
What's going on, guys?
How's it going? And we have one more joining us, Liam, again from the United Kingdom. What's going on, buddy?
Hello, mate. You all right?
Yeah. Excited to have you back because I heard last time you were talking shit and I didn't get a chance to defend myself. So I think we might have a more lively, entertaining podcast where I can actually defend and maybe bite back a little bit.
I'm sure you will.
Yeah, we'll have a good time this episode.
So it's Sunday morning is when we're recording this podcast. So if anything changes, that's when this went down. Sunday, I don't even know what day today is, the 16th. It feels like during quarantine, they all run together now. So what we were going to talk about today is our thoughts on the end of the season. What happened since the last podcast of, I think last time, was it me and Nick or was it you and Liam? It was me and Nick. No, okay.
You, Nick, and Dan, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep, that's right. So then we'll recap the end of the season. Dave and X put out a crazy podcast this week as well on the West Ham Way UK. And we also got some questions from our listeners. So, Brawley, do you want to start us off? What have you been up to?
I've just been chilling. Not really chilling. I've been working a lot. Got a pregnant wife, so that takes up a lot of my time. Been trying to diet. I've lost a lot of weight, but then when you get a pregnant wife, it's really hard to continue dieting because
Don't blame your relapse on her now.
Yeah, I'm blaming it on her. But yeah, it's been good. Hopefully, the season's right around the corner already, and we only got a couple of weeks before the Premier League kicks off again. So we're kicking up into high gear again.
Liam, what have you been up to since the last time you were on our pod? Like, how have you been handling the off season? Do you chill low? Are you working? What do you got going on?
Football Manager has become a big one for me. Yeah, everyone's got free time. I took a Norwegian amateur side all the way to the Champions League.
Wow.
Got promoted for about 3-4 divisions. And they decided to sack me because I hadn't brought through any youth players, even though I delivered the first silverware at the club since 1983 with back-to-back Norwegian Cups. So wow. I was less than happy. I'm now at a amateur Portuguese side called Sintrenzi. And first season promotion. So first objective achieved, but the second season I'm trying to fight to stay above water. So
congratulations on that.
Cheers, thank you. It was a big moment. And now, yeah, just to be honest, I've been watching a bit of the Champions League as it's been on, a bit of the Europa League. Bar that, I think I'm actually starting to miss it for the first time, maybe I'd say, with football behind closed doors. I've currently got a bit of Scottish football on in the background at the moment as well. So, yeah, bar that, work as well, and trying to survive.
Welcome back. We have a new microphone situation, probably sounding much better now. So we are going to just merge those together. I was using the wrong microphone, but we're back. So Liam was finishing up on Football Manager, and he's got Scottish football in the background. So let's just transition now into what we got going on at the end of the season. Let's start with Liam, our guest. How did you feel about the season as a whole? Final stretch after COVID, and then pairing that with the beginning of the season. Underwhelmed, overwhelmed about what you thought? What were your thoughts on the season as a whole?
Well, also he said that he didn't think we were going to win a single game for the rest of the season.
And then
we went on to win 3 or 4 games towards the end of the season after we recorded. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah.
Was it that long ago?
God,
Anyway,
so Liam, what were your thoughts on the season?
God, do you know what? It was a really, really strange one. I think that there were so many negatives this season that even if you look at COVID and take COVID, like I'd fully consider that to be like a negative of the season that we've just had. And you do have to separate it out almost into quarters. And there were definitely some ups and downs. Some good results against Chelsea, which, fondly, I think Antonio was like a real something to hang our hat on, the performances of Declan Rice. I kind of think that the Man United game maybe changed my opinion of Moyes, the one away at Old Trafford, where we were actually playing some really nice football and tried to have a go at them, which I certainly found it a lot more enjoyable maybe watching him and that sort of performance. I'd give this season maybe like a 4-5 out of 10. Not underwhelmed again, another season that we've treaded water. Another season that we've got to have another summer clear out. But it's certainly maybe a little couple of positives in there that's starting to creep through.
It's funny how it feels like ages. As you said, let's break the season down in the corners. Doesn't it feel like ages that we were just watching David Martin at Chelsea away?
Oh, God. Literally months. Well, it's quite literally is months now, but...
I mean, I felt like this season just was so long, or that bashing against Man City at the beginning of the year. I think that it just between COVID, the poor results, this was a tiring one for West Ham fans. Mm. I was exhausted by the end of the season. Brawley, what were your end of season thoughts?
Yeah, I was definitely ready for the season to be done and over with by the end of it. I wanted the season to end. And I wanted to null and void it out, obviously, and since that didn't happen, now Liverpool are champions, which kind of disgusts me. And I take a little solace in the fact that the fans didn't get to celebrate with them, so that feels good to me, and that makes me brings a little joy to me. But as far as the West Ham season goes, you know, I echo everything Liam said. I'm still not coming around to Moyes really at all, but at this point, no one's going to come in. We're not going to attract anyone better than him, it seems, at this point. We don't have any money to spend in the transfer window. Why would any other manager want to come to West Ham, even if we were willing to pay them? For me, it just is what it is at this point. I'm fully prepared for another mediocre season. I think if we don't bring anyone in and we sell Declan Rice, we're going to be looking at another relegation battle and possibly going down. But if we keep Declan Rice, I think, and we keep the same squad we have, we're going to be looking around 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th, right around there again. And if I had to grade the season in the American grading scale, I'm going to give it a D to D minus. I think it's well below what we should have been going after. And I was just ready for the season to be done and over with by the end of it. It was nice that we got to stay up. It was nice that we had some meaningful games towards the end of the season. So that made me not lose interest in watching these crap behind closed door games, because I still think they are absolutely terrible and I can't stand it. But, I don't want to ramble on any too much longer, but that's kind of what I thought.
Do you think West Ham is a desirable location to manage?
It depends on what your definition of desirable is. Like, I think for a Maurizio Pochettino, absolutely not. It is not an attractive job whatsoever. If you are a young manager in the championship, then West Ham is a very, very desirable place to come manage. But as far as attracting those guys from the top tier of manager, absolutely not. This ownership has proven that you don't want to work for them, really, because you're not going to get the money and you're not going to get the transfer funds that you need to compete for where we were promised that we were going to be looking at, and that's Europa League and beyond. But I just absolutely do not think that a manager is going to want to come to West Ham who like a Kovac or a Pochettino or a Bielsa or anyone like that. I don't think we have a chance in hell of getting them, purely for the fact of our owners being the way they are. What do you think, Liam?
Bielsa turned us down and then actually went to a championship club. So I think that almost sums it up entirely. No, I don't. I think the similarities to Newcastle and us is almost identical. Newcastle kind of trap manager. I mean, Rafa Benitez, admittedly, is a big name. But you look at the names that have managed Newcastle in the past decade. Well, people like John Carver. You look at, like, they've got Steve Bruce in charge. Those are the sorts of managers that we would be able to attract. Clubs like Southampton can attract your Pochettinos and your Ronald Koemans and managers that are on the upward trajectory, because of good training facilities, smart scouting, you know, good budgets, sensibly ran. I think maybe the only thing that we'd probably have over clubs like that is that we're in London. And bar that, no, I can't see a reason why anyone would.
And just look at what Everton did this season. I mean, look who they appointed, look who we appointed. They appointed a Champions League winner, and we went with an Everton reject. Not really a reject. He left them to go to Man United. But a manager who was successful at Everton 10 years ago, and they're getting guys like that in the door. It just shows how far apart we truly are from them, in my opinion.
Isn't it wild, though? I want to touch on something Liam said. I think it's absolutely incredible that, you know, we call ourselves, I mean, we kind of are a big club here in London, big stadium, massive recognition, history and all that, in the Premier League and in the top division. But managers do want to go to a Southampton where there is a scouting network and smart investment and a board that's worked with. I mean, the scariest thing about West Ham is, you know, you have a board that's supposedly skint that we'll get to in one of our questions from Piercy later. We're supposedly have no money. The stadium and all the drama there, the fans are always at the neck of the board, deservedly. And it's just drama and negative atmosphere. So I think that is the scariest thing about being a West Ham supporter, and our manager selection or prospects, you could say, is because they're all the stuff that goes around the circus club. We are a circus.
Yeah, 100%. It's I just get so frustrated when I have to talk about this because we shouldn't be anywhere near this level with the move to the new stadium, and it's just like.
No.
I was for the stadium move at the time because I thought for sure that they would deliver on what they said, and now we're in the same spot if not worse than we would be had we stayed at Upton Park. So that's why I'm just so frustrated by it.
Can I just say something on that? There's a certain website that we're all very aware of, that obviously has ties to the board. So the club at the moment is pleading poverty. Quite simply, we've got no money. And part of that excuse was the stadium, like the loss of revenue, anyway, I'm pretty sure that Sullivan has said before that we make minimal amounts out of that stadium because, quite frankly, we don't earn money on things like the food sales. No. That's all the government ran.
We don't own the website, stadium.
Exactly. So we don't know. So this website had said previously, we've got no money. The loss of COVID and the revenues and stuff was far, you know, it's caused massive problems. And then sort of 2-3 weeks later, in the same article, said that the losses have increased from 40 million to 50 million. So that's a 10 million increase that they reckon is the revenue. So are we 18th in the top 20 richest clubs in the world? Can't plug a 10 million pound gap. There is something seriously, seriously, seriously wrong at that football club. Seriously wrong. Because how can you not prepare for a $10 million gap?
Yeah, something is very fishy there. I feel like there's something, and I have no proof. I just want to put that out there for any attorneys listening. I have no proof. I'm not being any serious accusations. However, I do want to say something seems extremely fishy that we're constantly moving money around. Not that we have to spend frivolously like idiots, but it's constant. I mean, for example, one of the things that wound up people on Twitter, and deservedly so this week, is that the new shirts are on sale already. You know, trying to boost revenue through shirt sales and putting them on sale for £10 off.
I actually think the most worrying one is the situation with Haller and the payments that we're not paying £1 million. I think that's far more worrying, the fact that that's a club, Eintracht Frankfurt, that's got a good pedigree with young players, players that we could potentially want in the future. But why on earth would they sell a player to us again if we can't pay them? And the fact that a Premier League club can't afford £5 million out of their back pocket to pay, it's again worrying.
So, or they didn't budget properly for it. I mean, they would have had to know it was coming up.
Well, they signed the deal last year, so they would have known. But they could sign Suchet for 20 million when his when that was finalized. So none of this adds up.
No.
The whole question is where's the money going? I want to know where, because you know it's the same thing. You know, oh, we spent loads in the Pellegrini. Yeah, you had a summer where you spent 100 million, but if you look at the outline of player sales, the wages saved, there's still a hell of a lot of money that we still saved on. Again, just utterly ridiculous. I don't hear Leeds talking about that. And Leeds have had 15 years in the Championship. They're not coming up saying, oh, you know, the budget's tight this year. You know, we've been in the Championship for 10 years, 15 years. No, they're going after Ben White. I think they bid 30 million if reports are correct. So, yeah, to echo Brawley's point, none of this makes sense.
Yeah, I just don't understand what's going on. I'm no accountant or anything, but I think the concerning thing is, like you said, the £5 million payments. You know, where's the money? They obviously get the receipts at the end of the year from the TV revenue and place finish, but supposedly Sullivan is a billionaire, Gold's a millionaire, all right, on all these things. If you're not going to properly invest in your club and you're consistently losing money, I'm not sure what their purpose of being there is. For example, if they say they're not making any money, they say they're skint, well, then as a business owner, I feel like then I would probably not be in that investment. If they are making millions of dollars and billions of dollars, then why are they not investing it into the side? So I think there's multiple lose-lose opportunities for them, and sooner or later it's all going to come out to light. And people are angry, and I agree.
Well, they're either A, not wealthy enough to own a Premier League football club,
yep,
or B, they're just liars and they're trying to keep as much money in their pockets as possible. And either one of those situations doesn't work out for owning a football team, in my opinion. So I just don't understand why they're in this if they don't have the money to survive a pandemic, or I don't understand why they would just lie. Actually, I do understand why they would lie, because they want to keep as much money in their pockets as possible. But either situation, West Ham fans lose on. So it's really frustrating, and the sooner they're gone, the better, in my opinion.
Yeah,
I'd say both, probably. A and B.
Yeah, but it very well might be.
I don't even know where they go from here. I don't know where their saving grace could even be, because the way that they handle themselves and conduct themselves.
Declan Rice is their saving grace.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is with Rice is that out of all the money that they've spent, like the irony is that the one player that they could potentially earn a huge profit on has actually had nothing to do with them. He's run by the academy and come through the academy, like an academy that has been around for years and years and years. So even of all the money that they claim to have spent and chucked down the drain, you know, there's not people lining up £80 million bids for Anderson, or, you know, Diop or anyone like that. The one player actually is that they could dig themselves out of trouble financially is Rice, which they've had zero to do with.
The annoying thing for me about our transfer business is I can't remember the last player that we've made significant profit over. I can't. Off the top of my head, I can't. And to me, that's frustrating, because the board wants praise, right? They want praise. They're like, we spent $100 million. We spent $150 million. Or we invested in the side. Right, but we're still in a relegation battle. So not only did you invest in the side, you made very poor investments.
Yeah, and it's the boards. I mean, this is what you get when you buy players off of who their agents are versus the actual scouting of the player. I mean, this is what you get whenever you do little to no research on who you're buying, and you're going off of who their owner or who their agents are, and that's you have a good relationship with that agent, so you buy that player because he seems like, yeah, he might do a job in the Premier League. I mean, that's what it seems like to me.
So, I guess my question is, next season, right? assuming we start with another top six side as usual, and we don't take any points. Where do you guys expect? Do you have any high expectations for next year? A bounce back, or do you expect the same? Or maybe expectations versus reality. You could answer that.
Go ahead, Ward.
The same, pretty much the identical, because the club's treading water. So there's been like there was not going to be any change if they're not investing in the core infrastructure. So if they had spent, I don't know, rather that summer, they said, right, we'll spend 30 million on players and we'll invest something like 100 million either into scouts, into the training ground, improving that, so our players don't end up every week injured, all of that sorts of stuff. We'd probably start to see the fruits of the labour now. Because there'd be players that were signed, that were looked at, they've had some time for development. Even before that, with the vast list of strikers that were signed. Like even if right at the start of their tenure, we'd start to see the fruits of that labour. But we'll tread water until they go or they start investing in things like that. But they can't afford to. So next season, I think it'll be the exact same. We'll probably finish 15th. We'll go out of both cups really early because they're not cared about. And it'll be another season of, yeah, well done, Moyes, you've done your job.
Well, for me, like... If we made a cup run next season, I could excuse finishing 15th or 16th. Like if we made a final and went after a cup, I would almost be okay because that's at least something to hold your hat on for a season. But this mediocre season after season of just boring crap, finishing just above the relegation zone, and then praising David Moyes. Like I can't for the life of me figure out why a bunch of West Ham fans are happy to have David Moyes now. Like I just can't wrap my brain around it. I mean, it just blows my mind. Like, I don't know what else I can say on it, but yeah, I said it earlier. I'm expecting a very similar season to this season, especially if we get rid of Declan Rice. I fear the worst that we could go down.
I will say to Moyes' credit, I don't really want him there. I don't think that's not ambitious enough for me. To his credit, though, West Ham have called him. He picked up the phone. He did the job and got his money. I would never like question someone. Like I wouldn't be like mad at Moyes for like why would he turn it down? So I think, and I know that's not what you're saying, but you know he got the call. He did his job and got his bread. I don't think he's ambitious enough for me. I'm not happy that he's here either. I agree with you, Brawley. I think. When moving forward, though, all these people who are happy that he's here are almost blind to the fact that the club has put us in a position that this is the expectation, that this is what we should be shooting for, when in reality, all of their, I don't even want to say promises, all of the expectations they set, they weren't even the expectations we set. They were the expectations the board and the club set that they have not delivered on.
And I just want to go back to something you were saying earlier. You said you couldn't remember the last time we turned a big profit off of a player that we sold. Well, can you guess who we've sold for the most amount of money in the history of West Ham?
Is it Payet?
Yeah, we sold Payet for £26.37 million. That's the largest transfer fee in the history of West Ham United. And I thought. That was insanely low for a Ballon d'Or candidate, and that's our number one. Number two is Carlos Tevez for $26 million, and that was his sale on from Man United to Man City. So we didn't even sell him for that. We sold him to United, didn't we?
I think you went on a free. Such a confusing situation because of the agent situation.
Yes. And then
yeah, he went straight from us to Man United.
Yeah, we got $11 million from Man United for him, and that's our ninth biggest transfer fee. Two of our top ten is Carlos Tevez, and then three was Rio Ferdinand to Leeds back in the day for $23 million, and then four is Arnautovic, and five is Andre Ayew to Swansea. I mean, so Jesus I mean, and we didn't turn a profit on either. Either Arnie or IU, because we basically got back what we put into them for that. So, so Dimitri Payet for I think 13 or 14 million, and then selling him on for 26 is probably our biggest ever.
I don't know who could have predicted the Piatt situation to take a tumble like that. However, they did have supposedly offers up in the 40s, 50s, and 60s that summer. And if they would have flipped the profit, I would have been highly upset that he was gone. But again, I've said on the podcast plenty of times, if we were going to do good business, make profits, and reinvest properly, then I'm okay with selling players on for big money. I'm okay with that. But if we're not, and then on top of that, your main asset, who was the highlight of that season, who was making $65-70 million offers, plummets to 25 in January. I mean, that's abysmal. That's terrible business and man management.
Yeah, and for the pilot situation, I've got a degree of sympathy for the boat, because this is the whole thing. Is that, why would a player of that ability? This is a question I ask about Rice. Why would he want to be at West Ham? Why would you want to scrap it as a relegation battle every year? If your club is not showing ambition, your players won't stay. Leicester show ambition, hence how Maddison has signed new contracts. And there's trust with that Leicester board and management that they will replace those players. So if Maguire goes, cool, we'll go find a centre-back of what we need. And, you know, Cianciu came in, did an excellent job. If Chilwell goes, I'm sure they'll find a left-back that's just as good. You know, when Kante went, they went and brought in... oh, God, what's his name? Came from Monaco.
Is it Ndidi?
Ndidi. Or,
no, a great player, but no, who's Tuleman, the other one?
Tuleman?
Tulemans, yes. That's it. Tuleman. So they've replaced him with quality. So when they lose their players, it's almost like, oh, cool. Well, we'll just go swap that out and keep pushing forward as a club. If we lose Rice, the whole thing comes to bits. And it's so built around a player. And if you're a Champions League club comes calling and you're not at an ambitious club, why would you stay?
Yeah, I couldn't agree anymore.
Yeah, I mean,
especially when it's your boyhood club.
Yeah. Exactly. And as long as he left respectfully and we had a price tag and Chelsea came forward and put it, you can't be annoyed at a player for wanting to play at that level.
No.
And to be honest, I'd wish him the best. As long as he's respectful, people like Joe Carmi and Ferdinand always have been, that's fine. Then there's no qualms. You know, it's gutting for us, but I understand it.
No, yeah. I don't think you can be mad at him at all. And I think the funniest thing about this whole Declan Rice on holiday thing is I just think is ridiculous. People tend to forget that he played there when he was 14 or 15. These are the people he grew up with. So I think it's absolutely crazy, and that people are freaking out over his transfer. Like you said, if he leaves respectfully, doesn't make any noise on the way out, then I don't blame him either. I'd want to play at the highest level if I had the opportunity to.
Anyway, I think we can move on from this. Dave and X on their show kind of went through a couple of polls that they put out. I don't want to touch on all of them, but I'd like to get some of our views on some of the questions. First off, I just want to get our hammers of the years. Is it Declan Rice? Is that who you guys voted for, or who did you guys vote for? Tony, go ahead and start with you. Who's your hammer of the year?
Mine is Ogbonna. I think that he came – I mean, Declan Rice is the easy pick. Declan Rice has been fantastic all season, and it's not a knock on him for me not picking him. But I was really excited for what Ogbonna brought to the table this year, especially when he outplayed for Balbuena's spot, played well with Diop, and was a rock in that defense on a lot of games. When I, like I said to you in a lot of podcasts, I'll touch on it again. Last year when we were doing a January podcast, he was one that I would have sold. Or last summer, he was a person I thought was on the way out. But at the same
and Antonio.
Time, yep, him and Antonio. And then look at that, old faithful. Those two came through and were massive for us this season. So my hammer of the year is Angelo Ogbonna.
Ward?
I can agree with Tony more. I know, shock. Shock in the camp, but... I can echo that enough as well. Yeah, I think Ogbonna's been absolutely outstanding. Every time he's played, he plays with his heart on the sleeve. You see him dive into block shots. Really good positioning. I mean, that's what he's improved most on, I'd say, is his positioning in games. Not rushing out. I think you used to see him a lot, like earlier days of West Ham, rushing out, getting caught out of position, getting beat. But he seems to just seamlessly sort of slotted into that back four. And yeah, don't get me wrong, obviously Rice has had an exceptional season as well, but I just think the level that he's now risen to, a Bonner from where he was, says to me, I think I'd go for a Bonner.
Can I add one more comment on Agbono's performance this year? We have to keep in mind also he was playing with the fullbacks that are have been extremely disappointed this season. I mean, we couldn't decide which left back to play because they've both been poor. Frederick's in and out of injuries, which, you know, I think he's solid. I don't think he's amazing. Ngakia was a breath of fresh air, but at the same time, he was still a youth. And then Ben Johnson, same with him, still a youth. So that defensive pairing of Agbona and Diop still saving some games and playing extremely well when he had no help from the outside backs. So keep that in mind on top of his excellent performance. He was handicapped all season.
Yeah, I hear you guys on your Agbona points, and I think he had an amazing season. For me, what came down to it, I voted for Declan Rice. And the reason I voted for Declan Rice is because Angelo Agbona had small periods of the season where he was out injured. Declan Rice played every minute of every game. That's kind of what edged it for me. I thought it was so close that the fact that Declan played every minute of every game this season, as well as the fact he was an 8 to 9 to 10 out of 10 every single week. I can't think of a single game where I would have put him below a 7 this season, where I thought he was just average to poor. I mean, I can't think of a single game this season where Declan Rice was poor. So that's what gave the edge to Declan for me. And then one of the other polls was most improved player. I think we can all agree that Agbona was our most improved player. The next one that I thought was interesting was signing of the season. And it comes down to two obvious ones. It's Souček or Bowen, probably. Tony, who is your signing of the season?
Souček has been so much more impactful, so I think that's where I'll go. However, I do want to touch on Allaire for a minute. I do not think he was signing of the season, so I don't want you to look at me funny. I already see you jump, your head went right to the camera there. No, I don't think he was signing of the season. However, I still want to point out that I think he has all the ability to be a crazy amazing player for West Ham if he had the proper service and support. And he showed spots of brilliance. And if he had that consistency all season, we would be talking about Sebastian Allaire right now and not two January signings. So I will go with Souček, but I did want to put a caveat in there that I think Allaire could have been the guy.
I hope you're right on him. So you're thinking maybe Hammer of the Year for Allaire next season?
Well, I sure hope so. If he had the proper support, I think another thing that a lot of these players, I think Dave and X said something that was extremely interesting to me, that a lot of the players that we've signed and are already on the roster were not prepared mentally or capability for a relegation battle. We have so many luxury players or players that are excellent when everything's going well, but a lot of players that are not prepared to scrap for results. And I think that definitely showed this season. So I think if we're playing well and he gets the support, I think Allaire bangs in 15, 20 goals next year if he gets everything. And that's a bold prediction, but I think that he has the talents to do so.
Well, it's probably a better choice than my Hammer of the Year this year. I believe I said Jack Wilshere was going to be our Hammer of the Year this year, and he played like a grand total of 200 and something minutes for us this season. So yeah, that well done by me there. Liam, who's your signing of the season?
I think I've got to go with Souček as well, because I think he offers something that's so different to what we've already got. If I don't know if that makes sense. He's almost a midfielder that we do not have any midfielders like him, like a goal scoring, strong
box to box
player that's athletic. I mean, Bowen, I really like the look of. I think he'll have an exceptional season next year. He's had a bit of time to sort of bed in now. But Souček, for me, is probably my signing of the season. And just on the Haller point that Tony was talking about, I almost agree a bit that I do think that he could be like a top player. You know, you can see that there's ability there. But it's funny how when you sign players that you're not really signing for a system or as a mold for a club, that you start to find that, there's mismatches in attitude, etc., across the pitch. Because players that play at Wolves, you don't see that. But they come from different leagues. I mean, Jimenez, he's not, you know, he came from abroad and he hit the ground running for two seasons straight. People like Neves, Moutinho. So it's funny how when you have a system and a scouting system and proper processes in place, that when the players come, they actually do quite well. Yeah. But when you sign players based on maybe word of mouth, or we don't really know, well, it's alleged that it's through certain agents that this sort of things happen. It's funny, isn't it?
I think I've mentioned on podcasts before, and I'm glad that you're on here now, Liam, because I can ask you, because I'm sick of asking Brawley the same question, because it's the same debate. But transitioning from Allaire, because I want to get back to Brawley's questions, but I have to bring this up. West Ham, I really feel like the last few seasons we have not had an identity. I could not tell you what the game plan was, what we expected to do on the pitch, what we expected to do in the game. Or are we going to attack? Are we going to defend? Are we going to soak up pressure and then counter? Are we going to control the game and tire them out? Like, there's no identity. Are we going to play wide and whip it into Allaire? Because a lot of the times then I would want a second person with him for him to knock it down. I just feel like every game that there's no identity to what we're doing, and we're just out there trying to figure it out rather than training and producing a product. So I guess my question is, if there's no system, how it's got to be extremely difficult to sign players that would match a system if there is none.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And probably the last player that the last manager, sorry, that had a system would be Allardyce. I mean, like, Pellegrini's was just quite a fluffy sort of 4-2-3-1 such 4-3-3, and then Bilic's was kind of get the ball to buy it and then basically watch us win games, which it might be doing a bit of discredit to Bilic, because I do think he's a very good manager. But well, this is what I mean. When you have managers and systems in place that are so fluffy and almost botched, this is the type of things that will happen. We have no idea. I mean, again, I thought in the Man United game we played really good football, that kind of my opinion has changed slightly on Moyes. But I've never looked at Moyes as a manager for us over the 2 10-year that he's had it and seen an identity and seen what we've actually tried to do. But there's numerous clubs within the Premier League that are a similar level to us. For example, someone like a Brighton. I've spoken about Leicester and Wolves before. You know, I appreciate quite literally Bournemouth have just got relegated. But you knew they'd play fast attacking football and did well bar this season in the Premier League, right? And had an identity. So our identity is to sign expensive foreign players and watch them walk around the pitch for a bit.
You might be onto something there. I think you're right. Next question I have for you guys was, what's the best result or match of the season? The ones they had listed here was Chelsea away, the 1-0 win. And I'm not going for result for the season. I'm going for, like, what was your favorite game from the season? They had Chelsea away, Chelsea at home, the 3-2 win, the Man United 2-0 win, or the Norwich away 4-0 win. There's a few others you could probably throw in there, but Liam, did you have a favorite game from the season?
Chelsea away was an exceptional day out. Amazing result. First time we've beaten them there since 2002, maybe around that time. Again, I appreciate we beat them at home this year, and like that was more an important result for the fact that we were bang in trouble.
Yep.
But I think you can't beat beating your rivals away from home, really. So I'll go for the away game at 1-0.
I just love the songs from that day, the We've Got a Chance, Martins and Goal. I mean, that's something that'll always stick with me. I wish I could have been there for that game. But then that just shows you the sheer fact of how terrible Roberto was for us. Real quick side question, just a quick answer. Is Roberto the worst goalkeeper in the history of the Premier League that you've ever seen? Because I know you haven't been.
Go first, Tiny.
Oh, well, for
you think
for
of anyone
me,
worse?
For me, yes, but my history is not as much as I would say you and Liam. I've really only started watching the Premier League maybe I think 11 or 12 years now. I've been supporting West Ham and getting in, which so that would have made me like 13 or 14 years old. But I've not grown up with it like you guys have. Like Liam, you obviously live there, and Brawley, your dad is English, so I don't have the same history that you guys do.
I've never seen a worse goalkeeper than Roberto ever in the Premier League. I think he could be a lower tier goalkeeper in the USL where I watched my local soccer. I don't think he would even touch the top half of the goalkeepers in my home division two in the United States. That's how poor I think he is. And apparently Alavés or wherever he was kind of wants him back. So that's to take him, please. But Liam, is he the worst goalkeeper you've ever seen?
I mean, I was trying to wrap my brains for a goalkeeper that was worse. And yeah, I think you have to just the sheer amount of mistakes. I mean, you can excuse any goalkeeper for the odd muck up. But God,
it was one or two a game leading to goals.
I think he is the worst, certainly in the Premier League. Yeah.
My second worst, or maybe comparison, I guess you could maybe argue, not to Roberto's level, but bad goalkeepers. How about the complete decline of Joe Hart from England's number one, Man City, to barely getting into the Burnley side, a terrible stint at West Ham, like just the straight decline of Joe Hart.
Yeah, I think you said it. You can't put him on the same level because Joe Hart didn't single-handedly cost us every single game that he played in. But yeah, it's sad to see how quickly I was really excited for Joe Hart when we signed him, and that was another because I guess I love these old has-beens like Jack Wilshere and Joe Hart. Like I just love them, and I want them to be so good with us, and then they're just not. Anyway, Tony, what was your result of the season?
Can I be biased? Is it best result or our favorite?
No, sorry, your favorite game of the season.
Okay, so my favorite game was the 2-0 win at Gillingham. That was my first ever FA Cup match I've ever been to. Like I said, I used to live there, but I've only ever gotten to go to Carabao Cup matches and league matches. So going to see Gillingham away in the third division was the first time I ever got to go to an FA Cup or an FA Cup away game. So that was really, really exciting for me. So that would be my favorite game of the season. And it was a brilliant day out.
Wait, and what other games did you go to this year? Brighton away, Gillingham away. Were there any other ones that you went to?
Yeah, so I started the season off at Brighton away because I was over at the time mainly to actually go see the Ashes, which was incredible. And then I went to Brighton away. Let's see, where other games was I was at? I was at the Palace game where we lost 2-1.
Yeah.
And we were sitting third, went up 1-0, thought it was going to be the just keep pushing on, and then our season completely declined from there. I was at the Bournemouth 4-0 win. And that was it because COVID. I was supposed to come back over for Spurs away, and that did not happen. So.
Yeah, I've said it a million times, but I'll say it again that I was supposed to be at Newcastle away and Burnley
your
at
trip
home,
got
which
ruined.
Was yeah, my trip got completely canceled. I think for me, my results, my favorite game from this season it's almost impossible to look past that 1-0 Chelsea away win. The David Martin storyline is too good for me not to pick. But if I had to pick a second one, I'd probably say I really enjoyed the 2-0 win over Man United just because I was at the pub that day and there were a bunch of Man United fans that we were able to take the piss out of them. So that was kind of fun. But I can't not pick the David Martin game as it'll be for me. I did have another question, but I can't remember it, and I didn't want to go over any of the polls. So,
what was the most disappointing result for you guys? That's maybe the last one of the polls. I at least want to know what was the most disappointing result of the season for both of y'all?
I think it has to absolutely be the Oxford 4-0 result when just we go to a League One side away from home on national TV and or international TV even. It was on TV over here, and we lose by 4 goals to a League One side when we were expecting to go on an FA Cup run this year with Pellegrini. Are you kidding me? It doesn't get any more deflating than that to me.
That was the
I don't know.
Cup, but yes, I agree with you.
Yeah.
Liam, what was your worst game you either went to or just in general? You're like, this is really dejecting.
Oh,
there's been a lot of them.
I mean, the Burnley away game where Roberto just decided to keep throwing the ball in the back of the net was was tough. The Oxford one's the one that stands out to me. Me and one of my mates got there really early. And we just beat Man United off the back of it. And then, God, to get smashed 4-0 by a League One side is never fun, is it? There's almost too much to choose from. But yeah, I'd probably say that, the League One, the Oxford game.
I think for me it would be losing to Super Slav at home against West Brom.
Such a terrible performance that day, too.
FA Cup, you know, Super Slav, love him, but like, still, I mean, they got promoted and they were a very good championship side. However, you know, at home, it's his return. We definitely should have done the business there and kept on going in the FA Cup, and we did not. And I think that was a very, very disappointing. And whenever you, even if we're at the bottom and they're at the top of the championship, we're at the bottom of the Premier League, I think whenever you lose to a lower division side, just like you said about the Oxford match, it just is so disappointing. All right, so for the final segment of the podcast, it's just Liam and I. Brawley had to do husband duties and happy wife, happy life. So he went off and is doing that. So it's just the boys now. Well, Brawley's boys too, but, you know, anyway. Point of the story is we have two questions from Twitter since I put out this tweet very last minute asking for questions, but I think they are two very good questions. So the first one I'm going to read is from our buddy Piercy, and he says, do you actually believe we are actually skint, considering Sheffield United and Villa seem willing to spend big money? So do you believe – we kind of touched on this earlier, Liam, but my question for you is, do you believe the board – and the club don't have any money, or do you believe that they have a lot of money that they're willing to not invest in the proper channels, either scouting, training ground, actual player personnel, etc.? Or both.
It depends what you define as skint, because I mean, I personally think that they're basically just looking to sell the club on. So the plan from the start was to have as little cost as possible to get the stadium and then sell the club on for a massive profit. You wouldn't want... Because otherwise, surely if you wanted the football club to be successful, you would invest in all the stuff like infrastructure and look to grow that club if that's actually what you wanted to do. I personally believe that their defining skin is what they're willing to spend on the club. They probably have loads of money, and if they wanted to, could invest loads, but until that date where I think it's 2023, when they don't have to sell the club with interest, it's quite complex. That, honestly, there's no point really getting into it. But until the date, let's say the date that they're prepared to sell the club, I just think we'll be treading water. And to answer Pissy's questions, no, I don't think we're skint, but in their minds, we're skint because they're not willing to spend pretty much outside of what they would consider low cost, basically.
The hardest thing for me to swallow in your answer, which is I completely agree with, and it's the most logical and is completely true, that I believe that they do want to sell. I just wish, it probably wouldn't be a good business decision, but I just wish that they would be honest. I don't even care if they're skint. I don't care if they don't want to spend. I don't care if that was their true intentions and they're saying, well, I'm not going to invest because obviously why would I invest when I'm going to sell? I just wish that was the truth and they would say that. You know, I cannot stand nothing more than when they say, oh, well, we're local West Ham boys and we've always wanted to own the club. And no, shut the fuck up with that, you know. They're not tricking anybody. If they were proper West Ham boys, they would have made any other investments into the old ground. They were proper West Ham boys. They would have made the new ground, if that was the best business decision, 10 times better and more fit for the fans and experience for themselves. However, it's been miserable, the relationship between the supporters and the board. So to answer Piercy's questions, I don't think they're skinned. I think that they have plenty of money that they just won't invest. Do you see them ever getting the evaluation? I mean, this is just predicting the future. In your opinion, do you think that they'll get the evaluation they want from the club in 2 to 3 years?
No. Well, I mean, and I think that's actually going to be the longest period, is when they come out and say, we want to sell the club. Because Mike Ashley's been trying to sell Newcastle for years and years. And that's still dragging on now. The club's been up for sale for a number of years. And he can't get rid of it because no one's willing. Well, they weren't willing to meet the valuation that he had it at. And I think the valuation that reportedly they have for West Ham is almost double Newcastle. Mm-hmm. So it depends. With less assets, because we don't own in the club or full infrastructure, etc. I don't think they would, but it depends if there's an ultra rich state or country or whatever that might be that's just really quickly wants a football club. And to be honest, it's impossible to know actually what they're doing. But I agree, yeah, I'd rather they'd be honest. I mean, it would help so much if they said that we're waiting until this period and then we're going to try and sell the club, because the very least, people would have something to look forward to and have something to hang on to. But at the moment, there's no, because there's zero ambition, it's so hard to become enthusiastic.
If they just said that they had no ambition to make this club better, but the goal is to stay up, I feel like a lot of supporters would not be okay with that. But there would be some sort of acceptance. Does that make sense? Like, it's not okay. It's not the result we want, but there would be some sort of almost closure. But this, what they're doing now, is just bullshit every year.
Yeah.
Just yapping about, we want to be Champions League and we want to invest and we want to have a world-class stadium and manager. But the way that they handle their affairs is absolutely disgusting. From the stadium and relocating people's seats, recently the season ticket sales. I mean, it's embarrassing.
Oh, it's a constant embarrassment, almost constant. And you can trust them to do anything. They're quite literally struggle to get anything right, because I think they're so. I think on the flip side, they want to be loved, but have no business acumen on how to actually achieve that. They want to be adored by the fans, but they don't know how to do it.
Well, they want to be adored by the fans, but also have their business interests, and it's not going to be both. You can't.
Yeah, you can't, of course, have both. Football's not run like that. It's not. Don't get me wrong. If you're a super club, then probably you make loads of money and you're successful on the pitch. But for everyone else, you know, it's really hard to have a successful football business, because there's so many variables within that as a business that they can't have it both ways. So I'd just rather they just went. I think everyone does. And if they aren't going to go immediately, to give us a date of when they will go.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm adding one more question in here, because I thought it was interesting. I saw on Twitter, but I'm just begging to know. I'm begging to know. What does Karen Brady actually do for the club? Like, she makes all this money.
Embarrass us in a column every week.
Well, right. But and that's not even through the club, because from rumors are that she's being asked to take that down. But my question is, what does she actually provide to the club that's worth £800,000 or whatever the fuck she's paid a year?
Well, I think in that there was once a table of the top paid executives, and she was third. So I'd just be interested to know what do the club feel that she deserves to be paid the third highest in the leagues. So I mean, we finished what, 14th this year? I can't remember where we finished. So if there's 16 clubs ahead of us in the table, or 13 clubs, or 12 clubs, why do they believe that she actually only deserves to have two clubs ahead of her in terms of how highly she's paid? Or when
we finished 16th, by the way. So there are 15 clubs ahead of us.
14 clubs. Oh, no, yeah, 15. I'm second guessing myself anyway. Yeah. No, then I second guess myself. But yeah,
I don't know what your A level results were, but yeesh.
Oh yeah. Oh no, maths has never been my strong point anyway.
I'm just curious, and it's none of my actual business, but I'm very curious of what her day to day looks like. Like, what is the day in the life of Karen Brady for West Ham? I know everyone hates her. And I mean, and I do too. I can't stand her, but I'm dying to know what she does. I'm dying to know. Is it like, does she talk to other people? I don't know. She obviously, her fan engagement is horrendous. I don't know what business decisions she makes. Does she run the marketing department? Because that's in shambles as well. So I'm dying to know what she actually does and provides and brings to the table for her wage or just in general.
Yeah. And I think that, I just wondered why the Sullivan and Gold want to keep her around. There's so much negative press around her. Yeah. Why would you want that around?
That's a layup for them. That's a tap in. That's an easy goal. Sack her off. Can you imagine the positive press that they would get for sacking her off and save themselves £800,000? Or whatever her wage is. I swear I thought I heard them say that's what it was. Someone say that.
I thought it was something around that, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm dying to know. It'd be the easiest press decision they've ever made.
Well, they don't know how to do PR, do they, unfortunately?
No, obviously not. And the last question, this is why I say this one for last. I thought this was, as much as I love Piercy, I thought this was extremely interesting from Ian. Brother, I can't even say your name, but I appreciate you always commenting and being a part of the West Ham Way USA and actually meeting you, Ian, at the West Ham Way event. So that was great. He said, "Hope you're both are well." So I'm assuming that was for Brawley, but Liam, that extends to you. With everything that has happened this year, between COVID, obviously poor season and all that, how has it changed your relationship with football in general and with West Ham in particular? So do you have any changes in your relationship with West Ham or football, or how has this all affected you personally with West Ham and football?
I think that certainly for me, it's felt more distant, but that's because I'm used to going so often that just watching them on a TV has never been my relationship with West Ham, and I appreciate for people abroad it's different because I get to jump on a train for an hour and a half and I'm at the London Stadium, whereas, you know, people can't do that every week if you live in, I don't know, for example, well, the USA, all around the world, etc. So I fully understand that point, and you know, maybe it's more that might, how football might start to go, that they decide that, you know, they want to look after the international audiences more than sort of the home domestic audiences. But I definitely think it's been quite tricky because you don't get the full sense of emotion on the television. But that might be also because there's no fans in the stadium anyway. I'm sure when you watch football regularly on TV, when I have, fans in the stadium certainly add a part to it. I'm definitely starting to miss it now, 1,000%.
I think what I miss the most, and so it's obviously not the football. I think what I miss the most is seeing you guys. Not to be corny, it is, you know, and it's not even it's not even just the on match days. Like, you and I come over, you and I sometimes hang out during the week. You know what I mean? I miss seeing my British friends, my British families, doing the things that I do on holiday. I know I'm lucky and I'm special and I'm thankful, and I don't want to ramble about because not everyone has that opportunity. But, you know, you're used to seeing West Ham live every week. You know, I'm fortunate and thankful enough that I'm lucky enough that I can see West Ham every 3 months. You know, I come see you guys every, maybe beginning of the season, usually first 2 weeks, I like to come over the Christmas time where I can get two or three games, and then I like to come over in March and or the end of the season in May. So I miss seeing people going to the West Ham Way event, going to the Supporters Club, hanging out with you and Andy and everybody in, I don't like to say where everyone lives, but, you know, in our in the small little towns, you know. I miss that most about football. It's not the football, but the family that comes with it. And to speak for American supporters as well, you know, during quarantine and, you know, even still with the guidelines, I'm sure a lot of American supporters miss going to the pubs and watching in their cities here.
Yeah.
I think it's the family, the friends that go along with football, not actually the football itself. That's what I miss the most. So have you ventured, real quick, though, one last thing, have you ventured into any other leagues watching more now that you're stuck at home?
The Scottish League, which I referred to earlier, I've been watching quite a bit of, and I know that might surprise some people. It's Rangers Livingston. I find Scottish football actually is quite interesting. The officiating is awful, and we think it's bad in this country. You wait till you see some of the decisions. But the whole like Rangers recovery and you know, the fight with Celtic, and then there's quite a lot of interesting stories like within Scottish football. Other leagues, I'm trying to think. I watched a bit of the Bundesliga when that went first, so there was nothing else to watch, but it was quite a difficult thing to get into as like a starting point, I think, because I don't really know too much about that as a league. I think what else? I watched a little bit of the Champions League, because I don't actually, I know it's probably different for most people, I don't really watch much of the Champions League normally. I just think it's quite a boring tournament.
It doesn't really excite me because I don't have a rooting interest. I have a tough time watching sport when I don't have a rooting interest. You know, some people can sit and watch football all day. I can manufacture a fake rooting interest. I got into the Bundesliga and watched Frankfurt a lot during this quarantine period. But I have a tough time watching sports when there's no rooting interest. So, that the Champions League doesn't do it for me as well.
And then the Championship, obviously. I quite enjoy the Championship because it's always nice to see. So I watched a lot of that to see who's coming up for West Ham to play next year. I quite enjoy that side, and the playoffs games are normally quite interesting anyway. Just because, even though the playoff final was quite boring this year, it kind of exploded into life really late on. So, yeah, they're the sort of the ones that I'm trying to keep an eye on, really, the kind of the British sort of Championship, the Scottish Premiership. Mostly the British leagues, really.
Yep. So that's about everything we have for y'all today. Appreciate y'all and all of our listeners. I'm really annoyed because Brawley didn't pre-record the part that I always mess up at the end. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Tony Clark Dupe. Liam, do you want to put your Twitter out there?
Yeah, at Ward Liam, WARD, and I am easy to remember.
Yep, that's nice and easy. Liam's been part of that famous group chat for a long time now. Brawley and I always talk about we need to get Liam Hunter on here, or at least all four of us at one time. He's the fourth member that doesn't get talked about enough, and we miss you, Hunter, as well. If you want to follow the podcast, it's West Ham Way US Pod on Twitter. If you want to send us an email, you can listen back to another podcast because I don't know it off the top of my head. And last thing you can do is go on iTunes and give us 5 stars and leave some positive comments. And if you have any negative feedback, please send us an email or a DM on Twitter, because that helps us grow and get better. But, you know, we also love the positive feedback because we do it for ourselves, but we also do it for the fans. So that's me signing off from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Liam over in the UK, and Brawley, who is now doing shopping with his wife. So thank you, and enjoy your quarantine.